bonne soirée sur les ondes de Radio Panique 105.4 FM. On continue avec ceci.
Empêchons-les. Empêchons-les de perdre une partie du temps précieux et court que nous avons à sentir et à penser, et de passer à calfater leur vaisseau, le temps qu'ils doivent employer à se procurer les plaisirs qu'ils peuvent goûter dans leur navigation. Il faut, pour être heureux, s'être défait des préjugés, être vertueux, se bien porter, avoir des goûts et des passions, être susceptible d'illusions, car nous devons la plupart de nos plaisirs à l'illusion. Et malheureux est celui qui la perd. Loin donc de chercher à la faire disparaître par le flambeau de la raison, tâchons d'épaissir le vernis qu'elle met sur la plupart des objets. Il leur est encore plus nécessaire que ne le sont à nos corps les soins et la parure. J'ai dit que plus notre bonheur dépend de nous, et plus il est assuré. Et cependant, la passion, qui peut nous donner de plus grands plaisirs et nous rendre le plus heureux, met entièrement notre bonheur dans la dépendance des autres. On voit bien que je veux parler de l'amour. Cette passion est peut-être la seule qui puisse nous faire désirer de vivre, et nous engager à remercier l'auteur de la nature, quel qu'il soit, de nous avoir donné l'existence. My Lord Rochester a bien raison de dire que les dieux ont mis cette goutte céleste dans la calice de la vie pour nous donner le courage de la supporter. Il faut aimer, c'est ce qui nous soutient, car sans l'amour, il est triste d'être homme. Si ce goût mutuel, qui est un sixième sens et le plus fin, le plus délicat, le plus précieux de tous, se trouvent rassemblés deux âmes également sensibles au bonheur, au plaisir, tout est dit. On n'a plus rien à faire pour être heureux. Tout le reste est indifférent. Il n'y a que la santé qui y soit nécessaire. C'était deux extraits du Discours sur le bonheur de Madame du Châtelet, écrit entre 1746 et 1747 à la fin de son histoire d'amour avec Voltaire. Le XVIIIe siècle fut donc riche, et puis nous vous arrivons au XIXe siècle. Nous sommes en 1801, et un certain Sylvain Maréchal publie un projet de loi. Un projet de loi portant défense d'apprendre à lire aux femmes. Je vous en propose quelques extraits. Ainsi, ce Sylvain Maréchal nous dit... Nous commence d'abord en nous donnant les raisons de cette loi. Alors un des arguments sont « Considérant que l'amour honnête, le chaste hymen, la tendresse maternelle, la piété filiale, la reconnaissance des bienfaits, etc. sont antérieurs à l'invention de l'alphabet et de l'écriture et à l'étude des langues, ont subsisté et peuvent encore subsister sans elles. » Considérant les inconvénients graves qui résultent pour les deux sexes de ce que les femmes sachent lire. Considérant encore que la nature elle-même, en pourvoyant les femmes d'une prodigieuse aptitude à parler, semble avoir voulu leur épargner le soin d'apprendre à lire, à écrire. Considérant que le joli babil des femmes dédommagera avec usure de l'absence de leur style. Considérant encore que les femmes qui se targuent de savoir lire et de bien écrire ne sont pas celles qui savent aimer le mieux. L'esprit et le talent refroidissent le cœur. Considérant, nous dit Sylvain Maréchal, encore des arguments, considérant combien la seule conjugaison du verbe amo, j'aime, a occasionné de chutes. Considérant combien une jeune fille qui sait lire a de peine à résister à la tentation de jeter les yeux sur les lettres d'amour d'un séducteur éloquent. Considérant encore, considérant tant d'arguments pour que les femmes jamais n'apprennent à lire, que je ne sois pas là ce soir à vous lire ces mots. Considérant surtout que l'art de plaire et la science du ménage ne s'apprennent pas dans les livres. L'art d'aimer d'Ovide n'a rien appris aux femmes. Et encore quelques considérants, n'êtes-vous pas fatigué de tous ces arguments ? Je continue, quelques considérants avant de plonger vers un texte un petit peu plus érotique. Considérant, considérant, considérant. Et j'arrive tout doucement au bout parce que moi, ça me fatigue qu'on me dise pourquoi je ne peux pas apprendre à lire et pourquoi je n'ai pas le droit de lire. Considérant que l'amour de la science n'a pas la vertu de réfréner les passions. Témoin, Christine, reine de Suède, qui fit assassiner son amant sous ses yeux dans la galerie de Fontainebleau. C'est une logique implacable, n'est-ce pas ? Voilà la raison pour laquelle je ne peux pas apprendre à lire.
Merci Yamina pour ces lectures très considérantes. On enchaîne avec quelque chose d'un peu plus coquin. Une femme qui, elle, avait appris à lire, à écrire. Et oh, qu'elle écrivait bien.
Alors, vous entendez ce soir la voix que vous entendez lorsque vous écoutez Radio Panique le deuxième lundi du mois à partir de 23h. Donc, vous êtes comme si vous étiez dans l'émission Hot Lips. Et l'émission Hot Lips s'est créée pour que les femmes puissent parler du plaisir et du désir. Et ce soir, j'ai l'honneur d'avoir pour la première fois dans l'émission Hot Lips un homme. Bonsoir.
Bonsoir.
Et ce qu'on va vous lire ce soir, c'est en relation justement avec notre thème, l'amour, la mer. Et pour nos amis qui nous écoutent depuis Anvers, cet extrait est en anglais, puisqu'il a été écrit en anglais. Donc on va vous lire un extrait du livre Lady Chatterley, qui a été écrit par Monsieur Lawrence dans les années 1920. C'est une très bonne écoute, et juste pour vous faire 20 secondes de pub, vous entendrez ce texte en français ainsi que d'autres textes dans 10 jours dans l'émission Hot Lips sur Radio Panique. Bonne écoute, merci. And she went with him to the hut. It was quite dark when he had shut the door, so he made a small light in the lantern as before.
Have you left your undertip off?
Yes.
I will. Then I'll take my things off too.
He spread the blankets, putting one at the side for a coverlet. She took half her hat and shook her hair. He sat down, taking off his shoes and gaiters and undoing his cord breeches.
Lie down then.
When he stood in his shirt, she obeyed in silence and he lay beside her and pulled the blanket over them both.
There.
And he lifted her dress right back, till he came even to her breast. He kissed them softly, taking the nipples in his lips in tiny caresses.
Hey, but they're nice. They're nice.
Suddenly rubbing his face with a slinging movement against her warm belly. And she put her arms round him, around his shirt. But she was afraid. Afraid of his thin, smooth, naked body. That seemed so powerful, afraid of the violent muscles. She shrunk, afraid. And when he said with a sort of little sigh,
"Hey, that nice?"
Nothing in her quivered, and something in her spirit stiffened in resistance, stiffened from the terribly physical intimacy and from the peculiar haste of his possession. And this time, the sharp ecstasy of her own passion didn't overcome her. She lay with her hands in it on his driven body, and do what she might, her spirit seemed to look on from the top of her head, and the butting of his unctuous seemed ridiculous to her, and the sort of anxiety of his penis to come to his little evacuating crisis seemed farcical. Yes, this was love, this ridiculous bouncing of the buttocks and the whittling of the poor insignificant, moist little penis.
this was the Devon love. After all, the moderns were right when they felt content for the performance, for it was a performance. It was quite true, as some poets say, that the god who created man must have had a sinister sense of humour, creating him a reasonable being, yet forcing him to take his ridiculous posture, and driving him with blind craving for this ridiculous performance. Even the Maupassant found it a humiliating anticlimax. Men despised the intercourse act, and yet did it. Cold and derisive, her queer femme of mind stood apart, and for she lay perfectly still, her impulse was to leave her horrors and throw the man out, escape his ugly grief and the butting of a reading of his absurd answers. His body was a foolish, impudent, imperfect thing, a little disgusting in its unfinished clumsiness, for surely a complete evolution would eliminate this performance, this function. And yet, when he had finished, soon over, and lay very, very still, receding into silence and a strange motionless distance, far further than the horizon of her awareness, her heart began to weep. She could feel him ebbing away, leaving her there like a stone on the shore. He was withdrawing, his spirit was leaving her, he knew. And in real grief, tormented by her own double consciousness and reaction, she began to weep. He took no notice. I did not even know. The storm of weeping swelled and shook her and shook him.
Aye. It wasn't no good that time. You wasn't there.
So he knew. He stopped speaking violent.
But what's the miss? It's one little while that way.
I can't love you.
Can't tear? Well, don't fret. There's no law says us that's good too. Take it for what it is.
He still lay with his hand on her breast, but she had drawn both her hands from him. His words were small comfort. She sobbed aloud.
Nay. They're the thick with the thin. The war bit of the thumb for once.
She wept bitterly, sobbing.
And I want to love you, and I can't. It all seems horrid.
He laughed a little, half bitter, half amused.
It isn't a hurry, even the things it is, and I kind of made a hurry. Then the threat isn't about loving me, that it neither for season two. There's no sure to be a bad night in a bad school. That meant the truth with the smooth.
He took his hand away from her breast, not touching her, and now she was untouched. She took in the most perverse satisfaction in it. She hated the dialect. The thousand. He could get up if he liked and stand there above her, butting down those absurd corduroy breeches straight in front of her. After all, Michaelis had the decency to turn away. This man was so assured in himself he didn't know what a clown other people found him, a half-bred fellow. Yet, as he was drawing away to rise silently and leave her, she clung to him in terror. Don't go, don't leave me, don't be cross with me, hold me fast, she whispered in blind frenzy, not even knowing what she said, and clinging to him without any force. It was from herself that she wanted to be saved from her own inward anger and resistance. Yet, how powerful was that inward resistance that possessed her? He took her in her arms again and drew her to him, and suddenly she became small in his arms, small and nestling. It was gone. The resistance was gone, and she began to melt in a marvelous peace. As she melted small and wonderful in his arms, she became infinitely desirable to him. All his blood vessels seemed to scald with intense yet tender desire for her softness, for the penetrating beauty of her in his arms, passing into his blood. And softly, with that marvelous swan-like caress of his hand in pure self-desire, softly, he stroked the silky slope of her loins, down, down, between her soft, warm buttocks, coming nearer and nearer to the very peak of her. And she felt him like a flame of desire, yet tender, and she felt herself melting in the flame. She let herself go. She felt his penis reason against her with silent, amazing force and obsession, and she let herself go to him. She yielded with a quiver that was like death. She went all open to him, and oh, if he were not tender to her now, how cruel! For she was all open to him and helpless. She quivered again at the potent, inexorable entry inside her, so strange and terrible. It might come with the thrust of a sword in her softly opened body, and that would be death. She she clung in a sudden anguish of terror, but it came with a strange low thrust of peace, a tired thrust of peace, and upon it was primordial tenderness, such as made in a world in the beginning. And her terror subsidized in her breast. Her breast had to be gone in peace, she had nothing. She dared to let go everything, all herself, and be gone in the flood. And it seemed she was like the sea, nothing but dark waves rising and heavy with a great swell, so that slowly her whole darkness was in motion, and she was ocean rolling its dark dumb mass. Oh, and far down inside the deep parted and rolled asunder, with long fair travelling billows and ever at the quick of her. Death parted and rolled asunder from the centre of soft plunger, as the plunger went deeper and deeper, touching lower as she was deeper and deeper and deeper consumed. The heavier the billows of her rolled away to some shore, uncovering her and closer along the palpable unknown. And further rolled the waves of herself away from herself, leaving her, till suddenly, in a soft, shuddering convulsion, the quick of all her past was touched, she knew herself touched. The consummation was upon her, and she was gone. She was gone. She was not. And she was born. A woman.
C'était un extrait de
Lady Chatterley.
De Lady Chatterley, cette petite coquine, par
D.H. Lawrence, cet écrivain des années 1920 qui fut censuré pendant de nombreuses années.
Un grand merci à Jonathan pour sa voix. Merci John.
Avec plaisir, c'était très amusant.
Oui. Ta voix suave, tu as bien mérité ta bière gracieusement offerte par le bout de Ténas.
J'ai le ticket dans mon kawé, là. Voilà, je vais bien l'utiliser.
Et donc, c'était la charmante et sensuelle voix de Laura qu'on peut retrouver lors de l'émission Hot Lips sur Radio Panique le soir.
Le deuxième lundi du mois à 23h.
Voilà, on saura tout.